Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Welcome to the Post Restorationist Podcast. I'm Adam Ellis.
And I'm Phil Wilson, located in Nashville, Tennessee.
And I'm now located in South Carolina.
Well, we'd like to welcome back our two listeners that we might have. I've at least heard from a couple of people that are interested in hearing this, but I think that may be it. So just as a brief update, Adam, why don't you tell people what's happened in your life in the last 2 years, because that's more interesting than mine.
I have actually left youth ministry after about 10 years and have gone into preaching, and I am working with a church in North Augusta, South Carolina. So
you've gone.
I've had another daughter since the last time we recorded. So I have two kids. One's in kindergarten now, and I decided that schedule of getting up and taking your child to school every day is what actually makes you old.
Yes, probably. Yeah, I would agree with that. My life has not changed at all. Well, the reason that we stopped recording 2 years ago was because I had just had our second child. I didn't have it, but my wife did, obviously. Just we couldn't get our schedules worked out, so now we're making a concerted effort to try to do this on a somewhat semi-regular basis, and that may work and that may not. We're gonna do our best to do it. I'm excited about getting back into this. It'll be good to have conversations about this kind of stuff. We are trying to enhance some of our online presences. We've got a Facebook group. We should have a Twitter account that will, people will be able to access and know when we actually are doing the recordings. And we're looking forward to continuing the conversation. I guess it feels a little bit like somewhat of a different world than it did 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's definitely true. There's been a lot of transition.
So that's cool. I mean, it's definitely interesting. We thought that we would start off this first conversation with something that's been a big topic of conversation within Church of Christ circles. We actually just had a sermon preached on it at Otter Creek last week, but it's the article that was in the Christian Chronicle last month about the decline of numbers within Churches of Christ. And the article is called Church in America Marked by Decline. And it was a very interesting article on a couple of levels that I found interesting. One of which was just the overall decline in numbers that the article talked about. And it's a fairly significant decline overall. And so Adam, I was curious about some of the thoughts and some of the conversations that you had about the article as well.
Well, it's interesting because right after the article came out, I think I got a call like maybe within 2 days of each other from two different preaching ministers for Churches of Christ, and they were like, "What do you think? Did you see all this?" And they seemed in some ways surprised by the article. Some of it was being surprised that the numbers had dropped. Some of it was being surprised by some of the things that the Christian Chronicle did in their survey, including dropping several congregations, not least of which being Richland Hill.
Well,
in Texas, because they had added. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that it wasn't the Christian Chronicle that did the surveying itself. It was 21st Century Christian actually located here in Nashville.
Yeah, well, we definitely need to correct that then. I don't want to.
Yeah, because we're.
I don't want to misattribute that then.
Yeah, and I think. I think both you and I have Bobby Ross on our Facebook and Twitter, and we don't want to make him angry.
Right, that's very true. So whoever made the selection, they made the selection to exclude these churches that had added instrumental music in any significant way, even if it's an additional service. I don't know that they, for lack of a better way to put it, caught every church that's doing that, but the ones that have been sort of high profile did. They did make a point to say that it didn't significantly affect the findings either way. But the people who were calling me were just as interested in the article or riled up by the article, depending on who they were, based on that fact alone, and then also the declining numbers. You and I have talked before, and in some ways, just that the numbers are declining isn't that surprising. And there's some reasons we can bat around for that. We've talked about some similar things in the past. But kind of how did it hit you when you read the article? What were the things that jumped out at you?
Well, you know, it was interesting on a couple of levels. One, I will say that I was not 100% surprised by the article and kind of by the numbers that came out of it, not the specific numbers, because that's not something that I've necessarily kept track of, but you know, kind of outside of the quote unquote progressive circles, I think that you and I run around in, and I probably, if you took the majority of Churches of Christ, the progressive churches are not, would not fall within that majority. I think we'd probably be in a minority of Churches of Christ, but you definitely have an aging of the Churches of Christ, because if you go by what the article was talking about, the 50s and the 60s were really kind of the golden years of Church of Christ growth. And now you could argue if that was new conversions or if that was swelling from other denominations. You could make some arguments around that, but you really saw a lot of that growth. And a lot of those people have been very loyal to the Churches of Christ and have stuck with it. I think one of the bigger issues that you could probably see coming, one of the bigger questions that could come out of this, the survey in this article, is the wider discussion about loyalty to ideas within, particularly younger generations.
Well, within younger generations, I mean, I can go ahead and tell you, because this is a big interest of mine, and so being in youth ministry for so long, and then even toward the end of my youth ministry career, doing some campus ministry, this was something I was really looking at pretty hard. And there, frankly, in a lot of ways, isn't any particular loyalty to denominations or non-denominations that have official names, which is
right. Fascinating.
But there's this, it cuts two ways. On one hand, there's a very consumeristic who's offering the best product vein. And then there's another vein that just says, in our pluralistic culture, don't we have more in common with people who claim Jesus than people who don't? And so it's not even us and them kind of thing, but it's a don't we have a shared story, narrative, general ideas that bonds us more than any of the signs or any of the little things that we do differently in worship? The other thing that's really interesting to me, though, too, is because our tendency would be to say that part of what's losing younger generations would be the fact that we adhere to a dated style of worship, or people would tend to want to talk about the worship service itself. And I would tend to, in some conversations, want to talk a lot about the worship service itself. And we've both been involved in moving towards a lot more contemporary worship. The fascinating thing is right now, and hardly anybody was predicting this, The cardinal rule in marketing, if you read up on marketing, is don't let your marketing show. And that very subtly slides over to, wait a minute, you're just trying to tailor worship music to what I like?
Right.
That rings sort of fake. Why are you trying to sell me on this? Which is not what we predicted at all. It wasn't true for a while. And what we're finding is younger generations are actually flocking to high church liturgical worship. In pretty big numbers. They're not necessarily signing off on the authority. They're not necessarily saying, okay, now I'm Episcopalian or whatever. But they're drawn to those experiences of worship, partially because it's this ancient thing that's transcendent, that connects us way into the past, and there's a mystical aspect of it. But really, in all the worship war kind of stuff, nobody anticipated that kind of thing would take place. So, but the other side of that coin is it's really interesting to me that if that's true, then there has to be some other significant element that's playing into what's causing a disconnect with people. If it isn't the worship service itself, and if you could make an argument to say, well, this is part of our tradition, and we honor that, and it's transcended over time in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not as much as ancient liturgical kind of stuff. Then it would seem like that would have some traction if you could legitimately make that case. So what, I'm also curious about what other things are causing that disconnect.
Well, one of the things that I would be curious about is how tired, because I know I am myself, how tired people, our generation, probably maybe the generation ahead of us a little bit, definitely the generation below us, how tired we are of some of the theological or doctrinal hills that churches of Christ have chosen to fight battles on for a long time. Obviously the musical instrument one is, probably the most popular or the most referred to, I guess is a better way to put it. But I would even go as far as thinking, issues of women's roles within the church, fellowship with other denominations, a lot of those things that don't feel as important to us as what it means to follow, to emulate, and to be a disciple of Jesus outside of those things. When we start framing the questions that way, those other questions don't seem to be as important.
Well, and I think there's also this impulse that says when we have certain questions that are off limits, and we have certain topics that are off limits, and we have certain people that we can't engage or listen to in a certain way, it sort of feels like we're not really all that interested in truth, but defending a position. And I'm not sure if I'm making that distinction clear, because if we were really seeking what was true, or even if we really thought what we had was true, then it wouldn't really be afraid of any particular line of questioning. It wouldn't be afraid of engagement with other people, because truth would generally stand. It starts to feel, and I'm not saying that it is, I'm not saying that this is the intention behind it, but it starts to feel very disingenuous when we rope off all of these things. And we say, you can't ask questions about that. We can't even approach this. We can't even think about this. This is not something that we would ever do. And we're not even really having discussions about the why of that. And frankly, a lot of the position, this is the one that people would always come back to. Once Bono speaks at a presidential prayer breakfast and mentions that there are over 2,100 verses in the Bible that deal directly with our responsibility to the poor and the oppressed, there's a lot of us that sit around and think, there are hardly any verses that deal with most of the things that we've argued and bought about and distanced ourselves from other people on, and we haven't had a whole lot of conversation at all about the things that the Bible speaks about in mass. So there's all the sort of dissonance that comes into play, and a lot of the issues that have been so important for so long seem to be irrelevant on one hand, mm-hmm. and there also develops sort of this almost resentment of how do we spend all of our energy fighting all these battles and distancing ourselves from people that we have so much in common with. And almost this sense of shame from some people that I talk to of, I can't believe that we were part of that. And some of the younger people who really aren't, who are really coming out of that, I've even run into some legitimate anger from them, not directed at me, but directed towards the church that they grew up in and transferred to Churches of Christ at large. And a lot of them even transfer that to institutional Christianity, period. Right. And they're trying to find ways to, me and my friends are living for Jesus and we are church for each other. And that's causing a really big rift between them and their churches or their parents, because they really start just talking past each other and not even being able to communicate anymore.
Well, and it's important to point out too that, you know, even though we're specifically referring to Churches of Christ, that this is not a problem that's limited to Churches of Christ.
Oh, not at all. Not
that
at
it's
all.
Something that's in the wider evangelical community. It's interesting that in so many of the ways, just to go back to something that you talked about before, about how some how many of the younger people, boy, I can't believe I'm saying younger people, but I guess
I was thinking that while 30s, I was saying it.
I guess we can talk about those newfangled youngsters now, but it's interesting in so much of the railing against tradition that I know that my generation is engaged in, that our generation is engaged in, that the desire for something older, more deeply anchored in tradition or history, that we have so much interest in that kind of stuff. And I wonder if it goes back to what you were talking about before as well, in that we've almost pretended in some ways that Christianity didn't exist before 200 years ago, except for the New Testament, of course. But that because that side of things has been kind of considered off limits to us, that it has become more enticing and has felt more liberating to be a part of something like that. You know, at Otter Creek, we have our Wednesday night Vesper service that really tries to engage in a lot of the more ancient, I guess, for lack of a better term, practices, but also really lending a deeper meaning that sometimes a Sunday morning service that we've laid out in a particular way doesn't necessarily have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is, you do see people. I mean, I come over there for grad school and I stay at your house, and I go to the Vesper service sometimes, and it is this interaction where it's very, I mean, I think you were, not to do a total plug for Otter Creek, but I think you guys are very, very much onto something there, because you have these liturgical elements there. You have these things that really do have an ancient sort of transcendent feel, but there's still an element of selection and freedom to it. It's not, it doesn't come off as coercive, over the top, here's what you all must conform to. The service itself is something that people select whether or not they want to come into.
Right.
And then even the experiential elements, people who are there basically select if they're going to participate and what things they participate in. And so I think that's a very interesting third way that you guys are plotting, and it really does seem to resonate with a lot of people.
Well, enough for us to have kept it going now for 3 or 4 years. 5? We were doing it at the old building, so. Gosh.
Well, and the other thing that you mentioned that I want to point out is we have been very anti-historical, and we thought that we're making rational arguments. That's what we're doing. We've got all these propositions. We logically make the case. And our approach has been very coercive in that we've said, okay, I have a friend who went to get his grad degree at a different school, and I won't even mention the school, but he went to classes on preaching, and that's what made him decide to not be a minister. And he went into something completely different because in these classes, which this is completely different than the way that Lipscomb approaches it, or I might have got out too, in these classes, they were talking about, well, here's how you set up the argument, and here's how you close out the other guy's argument, and then they have no other option but to agree to you. And it was this over-the-top, coercive, back them into a corner, beat them down, and this isn't the way they said it, but when they agree that they're an idiot and you were right, then you've done your job. And that's just fascinating. It absolutely does not... that does not connect in any way with culture right now. What that says is this is about power. This is about control. This is not about truth. This is about you trying to get us under our systems. Now, that's not what people are trying to say, but that's the message that gets received.
Right. Well, yeah, I think what's going to be really interesting to watch over the next 20 years, 20, 30 years or so, and I think this is going to be a real defining moment for what's going to happen within Churches of Christ is, you know, the generation before us really had to make a serious cognitive spiritual leap from the, for lack of a better term again, traditional Church of Christ background, and very much as you were talking about, a coercive, very and again, I'm going to stereotype here, but it's okay, I guess. Legalistic perspective.
We got microphones. It's all okay.
Truth. It's just us and the internet. But kind of that legalistic perspective into a bigger grace perspective. And again, once again, stereotyping. And so I apologize if that comes across bad to anybody. But what's going to be interesting is that it seems like they had to make a certain decision to say, all right, all of these things that have happened over the last, 50 years, we're not going to buy into that anymore. But they had to make a mental decision to not do that. Whereas for our generation, we don't have to think about, at least from our backgrounds, we don't have to think about whether or not instrumental music is a doctrinal or salvation issue. We just, it's not been something that we've had to really worry about to a great extent. And I think for people 10 to 15 years younger than us, and for our kids, it's not even going to be a consideration. I don't think something like that's ever going to enter the conversation. And what's going to be really interesting is, will the Churches of Christ remain distinctive in the future? Are we going to look like just another evangelical, possibly community church? Or is there going to be something else that makes us distinctive? And really, I think the question can be as well, is that distinctiveness even really that important? Is that something that we should try to hang on to?
Well, and is it even true to the tradition? I mean, one of the things that really popped in my head, even with us talking about us being anti-historical, is actually the story of the American Restoration Movement, for example, is really a pretty beautiful story if you actually know it. And if we actually engage with our history, there are people that would say, not, oh, that convinces me that you are the absolute right ones, but there are a lot of people that would line up and say, wait a minute, that's really beautiful. That's really a beautiful way to look at it. That's really a beautiful approach. And to connect that even into the broader story of sort of church history, even outside of our movement, but to be able to make those connections, because what actually has play, you can make a significant argument that the whole way people come to know things is in flux. And there are lots of reasons for that that we can get into in another podcast. But where you used to, it used to all be about logical arguments and how technically correct you could make your argument sound. That really just doesn't – people don't care. They don't care how right you sound.
Yeah.
They don't care if you can shut them down. They don't care about the law because they know that actually some of the most logical arguments of people very much justifying their positions came out of Nazi Germany. I mean, and then you read the theology that came out around that time
right.
of the church sort of justifying logically its position of not being engaged in general, not opposing what was going on. And there are tons of other examples, but they just say, who cares if you can prove the rightness of your argument? Is it good, number one? But the things that are arbiters of truth are things like story. What is the story that you live in? What is the story that you buy into? What is that narrative? And for some people, that's just like you're speaking Japanese from a certain way that we came to know things. Experience is huge as far as sort of confirming truth. The experience of worship, it doesn't matter how technically correct you believe that you can articulate your worship is, if there's no experience of God in it, it doesn't ring true to them. The other thing, go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say that, and that I think on one hand that can be really good. There can be some negatives that come out of that as well, because then that experiential kind of thing almost becomes. I've called it the, and I'm sure somebody else somewhere else has as well, the cult of the new, of always wanting to seek out the new thing, and when something becomes tired, then you just move on to whatever the next new thing is. So it's a good and bad thing to say, yes, you want the worship to be something experiential, but I think there also has to come some kind of meaning to it as well. It can't just be I came out of that service feeling good. There has to be something right. challenging. And honestly, I think that's one of the things that people are looking for, is not just moral platitudes about, you know, whatever we've decided are our particular moral issues in the world or whatever, but really, okay, what came out of this service? What came out of this time that encourages me to be more like Jesus, to take that sacrifice that he made, but also to look at his life and to say, what's going to make, you know, where do I need to be to make myself look more like Jesus from his sacrificial standpoint, and then to walk in the victory of his resurrection as well. And that may have taken what you were saying in a whole different direction.
No, I mean, I've got a hunch about that. And it, at this point, all it is really a hunch. I've got some experience stuff I can point to, which I guess proves my other argument. But I suspect that the cult of the new thing, particularly when it comes to worship, is more of a problem for you and I than for the kids who are coming up.
Why do you say that?
It's just a hunch that I have. Well, partially because of the way that they're flocking to liturgical stuff. I mean, this ancient sort of experience. Now, the other side of the coin is I think we have a responsibility when we're approaching worship, and even when we're doing teaching on worship or whatever, to sort of talk about this holistic experience of worship that will absolutely include things like lament and like mourning and like sometimes just being able to lean on the community who mm-hmm. is worshiping around you when you feel completely empty, and you actually can lack a better way to put it, feed off their faith when you need to,
right.
because you just don't have any of your own. That's a much broader discussion of experience. When I was talking about this in college, when I was, you know, all excited and trying to make big points about worship and everything, it really was all about the cult of the new and can we do this and what's the newest hit the song. And I still, you know, I'm gonna listen back to this and think I sound like I'm opposed to all this stuff, and I'm not particularly. that. But what I am saying is, if it's just about being trendy and we have no connection to the past, if we have no connection to a deeper story, and if it is really just trendy and that kind of thing for what you're saying, I think that will actually turn off the next generation. It will be one of the things that causes them to leave even right. more. The third thing that I was going to mention is kind of an arbiter of truth is beauty. And I think that's really what plays out in a big way. And for a group of people who decided to be very, very utilitarian in the way that we approach the things of God, so we come up with very, very practical church buildings, and we come up with efficiency is one of our big things, at least right. we believe. I mean, it's comical when you think that that's what we believe and you look at what we did, but this is the way we thought about it. Streamlined, it's intellectual, we got rid of all that other useless stuff, and we really have no place for the arts, and mm-hmm. that in a lot of ways discredits us to people, that that's one of the main arbiters of truth. Is it beautiful? Now, you know, you get into the question, too, and I don't know that we want to run down this trail here, but I'll just throw it out there. Maybe we'll talk about it later. A lot of people's approach when they see this sort of developing, because you can see it, and you can see that the things that brought me even to faith don't even say the same things anymore.
Right.
They're not connecting with people even the way that they connected with me. They actually communicate something different than they communicated to me at the time. And so people, there are people who are promoting, I mean, writing books, you can go find a ton of books on this, about how we basically need to convert people back to this other way of knowing things so that they can be converted to Christianity, which I think is an absolute dead end road. I just think that's, I think that's a useless track to run down.
Yeah. Well, I think some good thoughts tonight. I think that there it'll definitely be interesting to see how a lot of this plays out, and I think should definitely give you and I a lot more fodder for conversation, and hopefully the people that are listening to this can react back to us as well. Our plan for the future is not just to be limited to me and Adam talking back and forth at each other, but maybe bring in some other people into it as well. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be a lot of fun in this new this second incarnation. Sorry. That's an old 80s wow. progressive church joke for
very, yeah. very inside joke.
Yeah. Sorry. Go look up the book by Rubel Shelley and Randy Harris called The Second Incarnation, and the joke still won't make sense, but it's a good book. Well, I think that's it for tonight, and we want to, like we said, we want to thank everybody out there who's listening, and you know, we look forward to interacting with you in any of the iterations that we have out there. So, for the Post Restoration Podcast, I am Phil Wilson.
And I'm Adam Ellis.
All right, have a good night.